FM WURD and 900 AM WURD, Philadelphia. Philadelphia. Black Talk Media.
Okay, we're back now. That first of all, that last musical thing comes in from DC area, you know, it's go-go, trouble funk, and all those other things. So if I have anybody in the DC area that's into that go-go, or if you're in Philly, you like go-go, hey, you know, let me know. No, serious. Okay, so I'm awaiting Drew Brown. I'm awaiting my man Drew Brown from University of Delaware. He teaches Africana Studies. He was a student at Temple and got his PhD in African American Studies. And he and I were a part of he organized a conference on African Americans in sports. And I was privileged to be a part of that conference. And so I'm waiting to give this young man a call, or waiting for him to kind of call in. And I'm going to basically try to remind him to call in. As far as I'm concerned, the biggest news is that the Nike ad this week featuring Colin Kaepernick on the willingness to stand up for something. Nike got a lot of flack this week because people were out there burning their sneakers and all this other stuff. And for the first time, in my opinion, and please, ladies and gentlemen, to call in 215-634-8065, 1-866-361-0900. It was one of the first times that a corporate entity recognized something. I guess Nike recognized the fact that they have African-American customers. I mean, last year we talked about the fact that a lot of white fans were being alienated because of the anthem protests. And my response to that has always been, well, geez, black fans count too. And they're not the only people who consume the, and white fans are certainly, while there are more, aren't certainly the only ones that consume, you know, that consume the NFL and watch the NFL. Black fans drink Coors Light and eat Papa John's pizza, maybe more than what anybody wants to admit. And they consume the products that are advertised by the league. And so, for some reason, our sensibilities don't get taken into consideration. In this situation, Nike took, you know, I guess Nike took African-American fans into consideration, or at least they appeared to do so on the surface. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, I think that's a good thing, because if you go on any campus between Temple, Villanova, or if you go to the HBCUs, Howard, Hampton, Bowie State, Morgan, you're going to see more African-American kids wearing Nike. And as a matter of fact, if I go on Facebook a lot, well, I'm not going to show my shoes, but I'm wearing a pair of Nikes. So that's probably a decent, and Nike, to its credit, took a risk because they probably knew they were going to get backlash from white fans. And that's understandable. And that's, you know, that's understandable. On one hand, they keep talking about the idea that, oh, this is about the anthem and all this other stuff. And there still seems to be kind of a tone deafness about, you know, what this is all about. People are trying to fight for justice. But yet, you know, you put the American flag up into the faces of a lot of white fans, then it's kind of like, oh, wow, you know, oh, it's just the American flag. You hate the flag, and that's not true. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, this is about, you know, paying attention to some of these issues. And for some reason, they don't get paid attention to. And again, it's almost like, I think protests, you're trying to get people, hey, look at this issue. This is affecting us, but this is the bubble society. This is the world of Donald Trump, you know, to basically ignore the issues of people of color. That's how it goes. Now, one of the things that I did during the course of our interviews with the players after Thursday night's game is that I caught up with with Malcolm Jenkins, and I caught up with him talking about Colin. I asked him about Colin Kaepernick, and I like to play that. I'm going to play that interview momentarily, but the thing is that one of the things that Jenkins did talk about was the fact that, you know, he didn't raise his fist, and I think during the national anthem, and I think what he's trying to do, and he basically said, look, you know, let's focus in on these issues, because the whole anthem thing seems to be detracting from the issues that we're fighting for, you know, to end police brutality, mass incarceration, to help young men who come out of prison find jobs again, and I think he's right. And I think you as listeners, let me say this to you all as listeners, you know, you have the ability to say things to your state legislators, to say things to your congresspeople, your politicians that represent you. And I think that what Malcolm Jenkins wants to do is to go through the legislature, to go through the political process. And while that may not be as pretty as protesting, I guess if I can call protest pretty, but the thing is, it may not be as dramatic, but these are the little things I think that you have to do. I mean, it's easy to sit out on the corner and protest, but the other thing is, hey, let's write our politicians' letter. Let's constantly stay in their faces. That's what you got to do. Now, let me. Can we play? I want you. Can we play the end of the. This is what I'm about to play is Malcolm Jenkins talking. We talked about. I asked Malcolm Jenkins about the fact that Nike basically is, you know, I guess starting to recognize their black consumers and their concerns. But I just wanted to get Malcolm Jenkins' perspective on this. So, Dave, can we play that? Okay.
What were your thoughts about Nike and having Kaepernick there? Do you think it was also kind of like a recognition of the fact that a lot of times people say they don't want to alienate their white fans, but no one ever talks about alienating their black fans?
Yeah, I mean, as much money as Nike makes off black people, I mean, I think it was smart for them, because they know, you know, the people who support Kaepernick and justice and equality also buy apparel. But I think it was important for athletes, especially for Kaepernick, who's been, you know, villainized and demonized by the media and hadn't had many people stand up and get behind him, like, you know, corporations, to actually make him the face of a campaign about daring to stand up for something, I think was perfect timing, especially, you know, as we get ready to head into this next season and people are going to want to draw attention to the saying back and forth about the anthem, to actually highlight, you know, that it's important for people to stand on their beliefs and important for people to fight for their communities, I think was a great message.
But that was Malcolm Jenkins' point of view of it, and I do think that it is a reminder we do have to step. That is what America is all about. That is what the United States of America. Now, do we have Drew on the phone with us? On the phone with us, we have Dr. Drew Brown. Let me say that right. Dr. Drew Brown, who professor of Africana Studies at the University of Delaware. And Drew, I want to get your perspective on this, because on the other side of this, you know, that are you shocked that a major corporation is basically, and I don't know, is it co-opting the movement when a major corporation gets involved? What are your views on this?
Hey, how you doing? You know, I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing. I think we have to be careful, though. I think that Nike hasn't really come out and tried to say that they are trying to be the corporation that is for social, complete social reform and social justice in the way in which Kaepernick is trying to push for. But I do think it's a moment of interest convergence, as Derek Bell would say, is that when corporations like this get involved, it's because they have something to gain from it.
Right.
And so I think that it can be good on both sides, just as interest convergence is supposed to be. But I do think we have to watch out because of the way in which it is more easily co-opted, because now there are dollars and cents attached to it.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you say that. But the dollar and cents thing that I see that's connected to this, you and I both have been on Temple's campuses, and you got, and I know you walked through campus at University of Delaware, which is not too far from where I live, actually. But I see African American kids everywhere, whether it's HBCU, we wear Nike apparel. I wear Nike apparel, okay? And so I wonder how much of that was motivated. And I said on this program that this is the first time you have a corporate entity. The first time you have really a corporate entity, I guess taking its black consumers into consideration. Because like I say, black people buy a lot of Nike gear. And matter of fact, Nike made its brand off of black cultural icons like Michael Jordan and Spike Lee and others, and Bo Jackson. You know, it's culture. I mean, it's national identity was created by black athletes.
Sure, and I think we have to remember, too, that it wasn't just black cultural icons that Nike got big on. It was using black cultural icons to play on black cultural trends.
Right.
The fetish for shoes that were already existing in black communities, and how Nike looked to play on those types of cultural trends by bringing in people like Bo Jackson and Michael Jordan, certainly. But I think it brings to light, I think, a stronger or deeper question about capitalism. Are we okay with being sort of the subjects of capitalism because we fought for so long in terms of being included in the advertising market, right, as consumers, being acknowledged as consumers? But we have to acknowledge that we're now being acknowledged as consumers in a very capitalistic market that doesn't necessarily benefit us.
Right. I would agree with that.
And I also think that we, you know, my biggest question with all of this, with Kaepernick being the face of this ad campaign, is that we really cannot forget, and I bring up Nike's past, but I really can't help but do it. It's very much widely heralded that Nike has had sweatshops in Indonesia.
Right.
Nike, was criticized for it, and so they bring workers back to, they bring jobs back to America, and where do they bring them? They bring them to prison, where they're paying prisoners 20 cents an hour. They're the very people that really Kaepernick's movement and Kaepernick's sort of stance or sit is supposed to acknowledge. Those people that are over-policed, those people that are facing police brutality and misconduct, those people that are arrested disproportionately and land in jail to make the very gear that Nike is selling. And I think we cannot forget that and attach that to the movement. My really strong question would be, how did Kaepernick sort of negotiate that with this campaign? And I would be really interested in finding out the answer. Not that I criticize Kaepernick for taking it and for doing it, because I think that there are pros that may outweigh the cons. But we certainly have to acknowledge the cons.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, Nike does have a history of sweatshops, and the fact that they're using prison labor, that's a part of what people are fighting. You talked to Malcolm Jenkins about that. And his fight, and I wanted to get from you the direction that Jenkins has taken, so to speak, as an athlete, because he has gone before state legislators, he's gone before city councils and things of that nature. He said on Thursday that he decided he wasn't going to do his protest during the national anthem. Is it time to kind of move to, I guess, a legislative process or other processes that are going to, I guess, truly affect change?
Sure, I'm a big advocate for the both and approach, not
right.
Either or.
Right.
I think we do need both. I think we need people like Kaepernick to expose people to the issues that are at hand and to inform people on what's going on. I also think that we do need to have people that are in the room with decision makers and legislative processes so that we can make legislative change. I think it's a both and on either or. So I commend both of them, Michael Jenkins and Colin Kaepernick, and I don't see why we can't be pushing for both simultaneously.
Right. Now, we have
I think it's necessary, and I think it's imperative that we actually push for both simultaneously. I think we do need to continue to educate the masses of people through protests. We do need to get movements going to inform people on what the issues are, while at the same time, those are the things that motivate people to go into legislative processes and change things.
Right. Now, we still have Dr. Eugene on the line with us. We had Dr. Eugene on the line with us. Dr. Eugene, come on, chime in. What do you have to say?
Good morning. This is I'm a first-time caller all the way from Clinton, Maryland.
Wow.
I'm accessing you through Alexa. Now, I'm calling because I have a question that Malcolm Jenkins could answer. I have a question that the Philadelphia Eagles management could answer. I have a question that many of your listeners could answer, even your guests.
Okay.
And the question is around the issue of the national anthem. And specifically, I want to start by saying, and I'm sure you know,
right,
that the national anthem is racially bigoted.
Absolutely. Third stanza.
One line in it, no refuge for slaves. Now, having said that, I have a question. The question is, approximately, what is the percentage? This is a rhetorical question. What is the percentage of Afro-Americans on the Philadelphia Eagles team? That does not have to be answered. I think it's about 65%. The next question that I have, sir, is Malcolm concerned about history in the sense of the Negro National Anthem? And by that, I ask the question. The Negro National Anthem, as you know, Lift Every Voice and Sing, is our anthem.
Right.
It is America's anthem. I wonder, and I've been trying to get to Malcolm. I called the Philadelphia Eagles management, and I want to get to Malcolm and ask Malcolm, Malcolm, whether you sing the national anthem with all of its racial bigotry or not, would you be concerned that we would promote the idea of singing during pregame activities the Negro National Anthem by James Weldon Johnson, Lift Every Voice and Sing? Now, having said all that, sir, I'm going to tell you who I am. I am Dr. Eugene Williams, Sr., and I'm going to give you a couple of references so all of you will follow me. I want the people listening, including your guests, to Google Lift Every Voice and Sing from the Washington Post, April 16th. Lift Every Voice and Sing. Please Google that. And
okay.
Then I want you to Google, sir, Lift Every Voice and Sing - Dr. Eugene Williams, Sr. And you may be wondering, why am I saying this? I'm saying this, sir, because I am that 76-year-old black gentleman from Clinton, Maryland, who's been able to get NBA teams all over the United States to play Lift Every Voice and Sing, in addition to the national anthem. I want you to know that. And I'm spending the rest of my living life on this earth promoting the singing of the Lift Every Voice and Sing. I've even called the 76ers, because I've said to the 76ers, if the Golden State Warriors could do it on February the 6th, if the Washington Wizards could do it on February the 28th, and I was there, my wife was there, if the Golden State Warriors, if the Boston Celtics, if the Cleveland Cavaliers, if those teams could do it, then maybe the 76ers and the Philadelphia Eagles and other teams in urban areas could do the same thing. So my question to Malcolm, my question to the management of the Philadelphia Eagles, and my question to the professor you have, I want to talk to Professor Stu, because, you know, this thing has gotten so big here all over the nation now that I'm saying that it's not enough just to get the teams to play it. I must go to school in Philadelphia. How much is the Lift Every Voice and Sing the Negro National Anthem sung? I'm going to colleges, NCAA, and I need your help, sir.
Okay.
So
Well, let me stop you right there. I can tell you from, because I'm also, I teach at Bowie State University. I love to talk.
Oh, I see.
I teach at Bowie, and
speak for me.
Yeah. But from that standpoint, you know, when I go, we have our convocations and we go even at athletic events, I have heard Lift Every Voice and Sing. Now, the NFL, I will tell you from that perspective, because I cover the National Football League, that's going to be a tough, that will cause some form of controversy amongst the fans, because, you know, like I say, anything, you know, for some reason, anything black that comes out of these things is always looked at with, and that's just from their fans' perspective and what have you. I would love to see them do it. Drew, what are your thoughts on what this gentleman has said here?
Yeah, my thoughts are twofold. I think that there is, you know, what should happen, and I think that with many of the players being black, I think that if we're going to acknowledge a national anthem, the national anthem that's known today as the American National Anthem is not one that was written by a black person. It was, in its poem form, degrading black people that were fighting for their own freedom in America. It was not placed as the national anthem by a person that black people voted for, nor did black people have a part in voting for this to be the national anthem. I liken this national anthem for black people to, if we were to take, I would say, if we were to go to Germany and take a Nazi poem, take out all the derogatory lines out of this Nazi poem and say, we're going to make this Germany's national anthem. But that's, in essence, what the American national anthem actually is.
Wow.
These aren't just opinions. These are facts. These are actual facts, that there are oppressive language in the poem that we take out and now make this the national anthem of America, which includes, supposedly, include African Americans.
Wow.
Those are facts.
Okay.
And if you take that and say, well, then if that's the case, then why not take the Negro national anthem and let's play that? Well, some people might feel excluded. Well, what does the national anthem here do?
Right. No, I definitely see that. You're absolutely right about that.
So really quickly, I would say that, is that going to happen? No. Like you said, the fan base is predominantly white for the most part, of ticket buyers. The boxes are filled with majority white folks. The owners are white. If you look at, like, the Atlanta Hawks, their owner was getting upset because there was too much hip-hop music being played.
Right.
Scaring away, quote-unquote, the white fans, and that's why they weren't filling the arena. And now we're going to have the black national anthem? I don't think that would ever happen.
It's the structure of this racial right now. Something?
Okay, sir. First of all, hang on for a second. I got to go to break. My producer's telling me we've got to go to break. But I'm going to hold y'all back. I'm going to bring you back. So you're listening to 900 AM WURD 96.1 FM WURD Black Talk Media and the Chris Murray Report. We'll be right back.
The Mattress Man is a second-generation family business. They're open 7 days a week and are located at 7421 Stedden Avenue. You deal directly with the owner, Julian, to ensure the best quality and prices on name-brand mattresses like Sealy, Posturepedic. Mattress Man discounts Serta, Memory Foam, Orthopedic, and Comfortech. Same-day delivery is available on most models to most areas. All of the mattresses are brand new, nothing refurbished. Call 215-424-5550. That's 215-424-5550.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
Or if that resume was from someone who
worked 12-hour shifts at the recycling company with my dad, who's 72. That taught me a work ethic that I carry with me every day.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone.
Growing up where I did, a lot of things could have gotten in the way of my goals. But I learned to push through, and that's what I bring to work every day.
So maybe it's time we look beyond the resume and look to grads of life. Discover new ways to develop great talent that are so much more than what's on paper at gradsoflife.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Word Radio, 96.1 FM. and 900 AM WURD. Independent Black Media. Check it out.
Well, I hope my listening audience is not offended by A Tribe Called Quest, because I'm going to throw hip-hop 70s. I may even throw some little bit of rock and roll on here and whatnot. You know me. But in any event, ladies and gentlemen, we still have Dr. Drew Brown from University of Delaware. And we have our caller, Dr. Eugene, on with us. And you wanted to say something regarding yes, you know, yes, that. And I got, like I said, we got a few more minutes left in this segment, so before I move on, but go on.
Okay, I want to leave this with you, sir. You know what? I got a call 2 weeks ago from the Los Angeles Lakers.
Uh-huh.
The entertainment person said to me, "Dr. Williams, we did not honor your request during last season." She said, "But I'm the new person now, and we are considering it." And
wow.
I said to her, "Man, you don't know me, and I don't know you. So you're going to have to put that in writing to me." So she said, "That's no problem." I said, "Are you calling me, man, because you know I wrote a book on LeBron James? Words Crossing Across, Word Search on LeBron James on Amazon.com? And she chuckled. She said, "Sir, you will hear from me." And then, getting to the universities in this area, Georgetown University invited me and my wife to their game last season. And this is what happened. We're sitting there waiting on the game to start, sir. And after a while, they played the Negro National Anthem, "Lift Every Voice and Sing," before they played the National Anthem.
Wow.
And then George Washington University, here in Washington, D.C., they called me and invited me. I could not go. But they say, "We will be playing Lift Every Voice and Sing every year." And I said, "My goodness." Because, you know, brother, this started with me, and I won't take much of your time, this started with me as an epiphany. I had an epiphany, and I asked my Alexa to play for me "Lift Every Voice and Sing" by Kim Weston, and then I asked her to play it by Melba Moore, and this thing just started going. And then I asked my friend out in California, who is an enthusiast, you know, he's an athlete, and he's also an educator. I said, "What should I do, brother?" Brother Whitney. He said, "Call NBA in New York." And I did. And I talked to the assistant to Michelle Roberts. And the assistant said, "Sir, that's a great idea." That was all that I needed.
Well, and I went. And that's because, I mean to cut you off on that, and that's, yes, that's because the NBA is probably a lot more, or appear to be, although I still remember, you know, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, I don't get into that, but they more so than the NFL, they appear to be more amenable to that than the NBA. I mean, Drew, would you agree with that? And, you know, would you agree with that, or are you still somewhat skeptical about that as well?
Yeah, I think that the NBA is certainly more progressive than other leagues, but we have to acknowledge that. I think even with the NFL, to be quick here, we act like the NBA, we act like the NBA doesn't already have an anthem policy in place.
They do.
This anthem policy came after Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf for the exact same reasons that the NFL is putting in a policy after Colin Kaepernick. We can't act like the NBA is sort of this place where anything can happen in terms of standing up for yourself and your rights and social justice, because it's not. I do think they're more progressive than any other league, but we can't act like we can't forget about those things.
But I can tell you about that.
Right, but I would say that I appreciate the other caller, the doctor, and what he's done, his contribution, because I think that we have to acknowledge our own selves.
Right.
At HBCUs and whatnot, we have to be the ones that say, "This is our anthem, and so we need to be playing it." It's one thing to ask other people to acknowledge us, but we need to acknowledge ourselves first and worry about that. And I think that is where it's going to start.
Absolutely. Well,
but
God,
I want to tell you before I go my experience with NFL. I started right here, and I called the Washington football team, and I spoke to Doug Williams. Yeah, everybody knows Doug Williams, the first black quarterback.
Yeah.
For the Washington football team. And we had a long conversation. And he ended the conversation this way. He said, sir, the problem is with 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But I said to him, as I'm saying to you and all your listeners, every day I called NFL. I've called the Players Union. I've left messages for, I think it's Mr. Williams, I think it is.
Right.
I've left messages for him. And so now I'm just waiting because God is in the mix.
Right.
We'll see what happens. Thank you for allowing me to share this.
Okay.
And I just want you to Google Lift Every Voice and Sing, Washington Post, April 16th, and Google Lift Every Voice and Sing, dash Dr. Eugene Williams Sr., and I'd like to come over sometime and visit you at Boise State.
Okay.
I put before the county executive this. I asked him to do an executive order encouraging teachers and schools in Maryland,
okay,
you know, in Prince George's County, to exercise Lift Every Voice and Sing. So I'm waiting on him.
Okay.
God bless you, brother, and keep up the great work.
Thank you, Eugene. And like I say again, you know, looking at this, and Drew, I'm gonna give you the last word on this. So from that from all these standpoints, right now this movement we talked about. Colin Kaepernick, you said doing both and in the protests and everything, we should be able to do both and in all this. And so, final word on this, how do you see this moving forward, you know, in terms of the players protesting and in terms of, will fans get to that point where they have to take this to another level? I'm talking about African-American fans and also the African-American community.
Absolutely. I think that it's going to take a concerted effort on all fronts. It has to be a double V, a victory on the front lines and a victory in the legislative spaces. I think that we all have to get behind both. We can't leave either behind.
Right.
And so I would encourage people to do both. If you're doing one, that's great, but let's also focus on the other one as well. Let's continue to elevate the information that's being put out there, elevate the understanding around these issues. Let's elevate the urgency that we need to take in these issues. But at the same time, let's make sure we're putting people in position and supporting those that are going into the decision-making rooms, that are going in equipped with things that benefit us and our community and people that have been oppressed, marginalized, and alienated. Let's continue to push to get those people in spaces so that change can be made from a legislative space, as well as pushing the social spaces.
Okay. Drew, thank you so much. We're bringing you back, bro. We'll bring you back here again. We're going to bring you back. Thank you for your time today, because I got to push to the next segment. We're going to talk about Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka. So thank you for your time today. I got to bring my man Andrew Rosario on. So thank you very much.
And you got to talk about Madison Keys and how he had a bunch of black women in the semifinals for the U.S. Open, except for Madison Keys doesn't identify as black. We got some things to talk about.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. We'll definitely do that. Thank you so much, Drew. Appreciate you, bro.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'm waiting right now. Right now, I gotta get my man Andrew Rosario on here because, like I said, you know, we're gonna talk about the fact that you have two women of color in the U.S. Open final, and you also had three women of color in the U.S. Open semifinals. As a matter of fact, in the quarterfinals, you had four. Sloane Stephenson lost to Serena Williams' opponent a couple of days earlier, or else you would have had four women of African descent in the in the semifinals at the U.S. Open. Even if Madison Keys does not acknowledge that her dad is African American, but and I like to definitely talk about that dynamic as well. And I definitely like to get we like to do a segment on that about athletes who for some reason don't like to acknowledge their African American heritage or roots and all that. I guess there's a whole lot of things that we can talk about as I'm waiting for Andrew to call in. And so from that standpoint, this is going to be interesting women's singles finals today. Serena Williams, the veteran, who is basically out to make history to win her 24th Grand Slam against up-and-coming Naomi Osaka, who's been on the rise for the last couple of years. She's 18 years old and seemingly have all the youth and stamina on her side. And so from that standpoint, it's gonna be an interesting match. And like I say, Serena is still, still been recovering from her, from having a child last year. And we wanna see, if she's 100% back. According to my man Andrew Rosario, who's been watching the US Open, he seems to think that Serena is about 100% back from, and that's a difficult thing. I don't know are you ever 100% back and from that standpoint. So we'll see. We'll see what happens today. And as a matter of fact, let's get Andrew on here right now. Andrew, first of all, How well has Serena looked in this tournament? How well has Naomi Osaka? Because it seems like Naomi Osaka is almost at that point where if she ever gets to that point where she's confident enough to be dominant, she's going to be a tough opponent in the years to come.
Well, first of all, Chris, how you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem, man. Good.
I may think that Serena's 100%, but after she... she won her last match to get to the finals, and she dominated that. She said she's only about 60-70%.
Wow.
Where she needs to be, which is kind of scary.
That is scary.
Given how well she's done to this point. And the thing about her, she's dominating on all aspects of her game. Her serve is tremendous. She's rushing the net when she has to. Her backhand is dominant. It helped the fact that there were no top 10 women in the quarters or the semis. But still, in all, you have to beat the people that are in front of you. And not only has she beaten them, but she's dominated them. And for her to think that, she's only at 60-70% is scary for the future. And the other thing is that she says that she's weighed less now after giving birth than she was before giving birth. So she's getting her body in shape. As well as she's gaining that confidence again. And you can see almost that gleam in her eye that she wants this. She wants this really bad, especially the fact that she made it all the way to the Wimbledon finals only to lose that is kind of fueling that fire.
Right. And speaking of that fire, from what I understand, Naomi Osaka beat Serena in Miami earlier this year. Do you take any stock from that? And how good is Naomi Osaka from what you've seen so far in this fortnight?
Well, she did beat her in the first round of the Miami Open, and Serena was not happy about that at all. As a matter of fact, she didn't even attend the post-match press conference. She got fined for that as well. She literally, the minute this match was over, she shook Naomi's hand, and she literally walked to her car and drove off. She didn't want to speak to anybody. At that point in that tournament, she was still breastfeeding, so that might have been a factor as well.
Right.
Also, given the fact that they're playing in Miami, the heat might have been a factor as well. But let's not take anything away from Naomi, because she won Indian Wells. She won the championship in Indian Wells, so that gave her a little bit more, I would say, not incentive, but it gave her a little bit more confidence going into, the tournament. So, and she's played well. I mean, she's played really well again. When she beat Madison Keys, she faced 13 break points during the match, and she survived all of them, and that was the key for her to getting through Madison. Now, I look at it this way. You almost have the changing of the guard. You have the veteran who's won as many Grand Slams as she has, and she's looking to add to that, but then you have the upstart in Naomi, and she's going to give it her all. On one level, I want Serena to win because she's in the twilight of her career, but on the other hand, you have this upstart, this young woman who is playing phenomenal tennis, And if she happens to come away with this victory, it could mean a lot for her and her career. Let's remember that Sloane Stephens, she won the U.S. Open
last year.
And since then, she's really struggled. You know, she lost in the quarterfinals this year. Earlier in the Grand Slam, she's lost. So it just goes to show you that just because you win a Grand Slam tournament doesn't mean that every year you're going to win another one, because it's almost like any other sport. It's hard to get that second or third championship.
Yeah, and from what I understand, Sloane Stephens was ill. My friend Marlisa Lawrence Corbett, who writes about tennis down in Florida, was telling me that she might have been ill for that match, been ill throughout the tournament. Well, did you get a sense of that watching her play this week or watching her? Because I saw parts of her quarterfinal match, and it just seemed like she just wasn't there. Although there was a point at 4-4 in the second set, she was up a triple break point, and she just kind of lost it from there.
Yeah, she didn't look the same at all. The woman that she played, Sevastova, she had this amazing drop shot that
right.
was just crushing her. The same drop shot, and I said this the other day, you live by the drop shot and you die by the drop shot, because she definitely died against Serena. She couldn't make those drop shots the way she made them against Sloane. And part of it was that the power that Serena was hitting those balls makes it even more tougher to get, you know, those drop shots across the net as compared to Sloane, who she didn't use it as an excuse, but she wasn't physically 100%. I think she had a cold or she had some other, like, issues with her stamina, and it showed.
Wow. Well, here's the thing, Andrew. We got to go to break, okay?
Okay.
But I want you to talk about Naomi Osaka's game, maybe a little bit about her background, and just kind of find out what she brings to the table as a player here. So hold that thought. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. You're listening to 96.1 FM WURD, 900 AM WURD, Black Talk Media. The Chris Murray Report will be right back.
This is big. It's also medium and small. Any size hot coffee for $1 is back, and now on McDonald's $1, $2, $3 menu. We're talking coffee for true coffee lovers, made with 100% Arabica beans, expertly roasted and freshly brewed. It's coffee the way it should be. So all you Java fans out there, rejoice. Any size hot coffee for $1 is back at McDonald's. Coffee and savings don't get any better than this. At participating McDonald's, a la carte only, cannot be combined with combo meal.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is Toni Staton, Executive Director of LESED. On behalf of the working families of the Labor District Council of Philadelphia and Vicinity, I want to encourage you to vote in the upcoming midterm elections in November. This is perhaps one of the most important elections of our times. In order to vote, you must be registered. Please, October the 9th is the last day to register for the November elections. Voting can be the great equalizer, but only when your vote is cast. Don't forget to tune into Labor's Live every Friday at 4 p.m. This message is brought to you by LESED, Labor's Employers Cooperation and Education Trust.
You're listening to Word Radio, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD, independent black media.
Right back. Nile Rodgers is, to me, that dude's the greatest, one of the greatest funk guitars of all time. Although I like my man Hiram Bullock and some others, but love my man Nile Rodgers. Okay, Andrew, getting back to this, let's talk.
Cannot argue with that with Rodgers. I mean, he is a bad cat.
Oh, no doubt about that. Now, I got to ask you about Naomi Osaka's game. I hear she has a mean serve. I watched some of the Madison Keys matchup, and I get this sense that looking at her demeanor where she's played, I don't think, does she realize how good she is at this point? Because, you know, athletes can somehow recognize how good they are, but some athletes don't, especially when they're just young and up and coming. Does she recognize how good she is at this point?
I think she's beginning to recognize that, and I think part of that is when you're winning and the way you're winning, it has to breed confidence. For the fact that, you know, she idolized Serena when she was growing up. As a matter of fact, I think in 2014, she first met Serena, and there's a really nice photo of both of them together. And after she beat Madison the other night, they asked her, you know, what she was thinking about the fact that, you know, she had those 13 great points. She saved them all. She came out and she said, "I was thinking that I want to play Serena." And, you know, and everybody was laughing about that. And it's not that she was being cocky or arrogant, but it just goes to show you the level of confidence that she's gained with the recent success. And, you know, and again, in order to be the best, you have to beat the best.
Right.
And this is going to be a big test for her. And you mentioned her serve. I think that's going to be one of the key factors in today's match between both of them. Who serve is more dominant? Who can win more points off their first serve as compared to their second serve? Because, you know, both of them have powerful forehands, have powerful backhands. And once you get into that second serve, you're kind of on the defensive because you don't know what to expect upon the return. And I think that's going to be a big factor in who comes away with the title today.
Wow. Let me ask, what's the weather forecast? I mean, down here in Philly, it's cloudy. What do you think? And that match starts at 4 o'clock today.
Correct.
What are things looking like in New York today?
It's going to be overcast. It's not going to be as hot and humid as it was earlier in the week, which was really had a factor in the outcome of some of these matches. I mean, some of the match time temperatures were like in the mid-90s to upper 90s with humidity 80 to 85%, and it was suffocating a lot of these players. The weather will not be a factor today, and you know, now with the roof that they have, even if it starts raining or drizzling, they'll close that roof right away, so that won't be a factor. Weather will not be a factor in determining the outcome of today's match.
And so how do you see this? Will this go to three sets? In other words, if it goes to three sets, who benefits from that? Will that be Osaka or will that be Serena?
I think if it goes three sets, it's going to favor Naomi, only because of the youth standpoint. If I'm Serena, I don't want this to go to a third set. So if it goes to a third set, I'm definitely going to lean towards Naomi. And if I'm Serena, I want to get this done in two sets.
Right. I want to ask, though, and I, like I say again, what does this mean when you see the fact that in the quarterfinals and then the semifinals, you had three women of color, like I say, you know, two were African American, the other one is sort of, I guess, Afro. She was from Japan, and both her dad's from Haiti. What does this mean to the sport to see? I mean, you know, to see, especially in a non-traditional sport where this is a country club sport. Although, ironically, I get the feeling that internationally, ordinary, it seems like they get more ordinary people who don't come from, who aren't necessarily rich playing the game more. So, like, especially the Eastern European countries, it seems like ordinary people can play. People who are not rich, you know, like it is. Like tennis is a country club sport here in America, but other places it's not.
Well, I think that's one of the things that the USTA is trying to sort of establish, that you don't have to come from quote unquote a white bread environment in order to participate, especially at a high level. They're promoting tennis everywhere. As a matter of fact, USTA just donated $25,000 to Puerto Rico to reestablish that program and to repair the stadium that was damaged as a result of the hurricane. So, you know, they definitely want to include every type of nationality across the board to keep the interest. Now, when it comes to African Americans in the sport, unfortunately, from the men's side, there really is no one there that we can speak of.
Right.
But from the women's side, again, like you mentioned, three of the four women in the finals have African American background at some point. And I think from that standpoint, the legacy that had been created by Althea Gibson and then moved on, you know, to the other African American women leading up to Venus and Serena, I think that it's giving these young ladies more motivation, something to look forward to, something to the standard that they've set to try to, you know, keep that legacy going.
Right. So, and that's important. Now, from a legacy, speaking of legacy standpoints, I mean, to me, Serena Williams is, you know, she's 36 years old. And to me, it seems like as you get older, that window, you know, to close, what happens if she wins? If she wins her 24th Grand Slam, which would be the most in the Open era, and she will be tied with Margaret Court overall for the before the Open era. But do you think if she wins this today, is she possibly thinking about leaving the court and retiring? Is she starting on that road to retirement? Or even if she loses, will she start on that road to retirement? Does she feel that she still has enough left in her?
She said the other night that right now she's not even thinking that far ahead.
Right.
Literally taking, one tournament at a time. And like I said, I may think and you may think and people may watch her and say, you know, she's back. But she's the first one to admit that she's got a long way to go. She said she had a conversation with her mom after she gave birth. And her mom said it's going to take you a year to maybe 2 years to even start feeling yourself before you gave birth. So if that's the case, and you know, her training regimen is phenomenal.
Right.
And she still has that fire. She still has that fire in her eye. And it's almost like she's challenged folks. She kind of senses that folks are doubting whether or not she can resume to a championship level. And I think that fuels her even more.
Wow. One thing I wanted to talk to you, and I think you mentioned this the last time you and I talked, she has some interesting views on Colin Kaepernick, and especially given her own situation regarding the jumpsuit at the French Open that she's no longer allowed to wear. And this week she was sporting a tutu. Was that a part of that? Was that a part of her, you know, I guess, you know, part of her sort of enmity against the French Open people for outlawing that suit that she was wearing, and obviously, I would say that there was definitely some racial overtones there.
I agree 100%, but you know what? She has a subtle way of sending messages in what she wears, and I'm sure the outfit that she puts on, well, the first thing she'll say is, I've got to feel comfortable in it.
Right.
Second of all, how does it look? So she's sending a subtle message that, you know, you may try to put some restrictions on me, but in the end, I'm going to wear what I want to wear, and there's nothing you can do about it. And for the French to come out and ban her, Billie Jean King came out and slammed, the folks at the French Open, saying that it's not their place to dictate, you know, what people wear. So it's going to be very interesting to see what she wears next year, you know, when she steps on Roland Garros court.
Okay. One quick thing before we go. Can you give me a prediction? Who wins and why?
I'm going to go with the savvy veteran in Serena. You know, she's been through the fire before. You know, there's a big difference in winning a tournament at Indian Wells or beating Serena in the first round, given that she wasn't close to where she wanted to be. I think the crowd will be behind Serena as they always are. And I think I'm going to say that Serena, I think Serena's going to win. She'll be holding up the trophy at the end of the day.
Okay. Straight sets or in three?
I'm going to say straight sets.
Okay. Andrew, as always, I appreciate your time, and I'm going to try to get to the Meadowlands this year to cover the Giants game, and we definitely got to highlight one another, man.
Sounds like a plan, Chris. Listen, and next time we'll talk about your Eagles and my Giants.
Absolutely, and I want to have you back on there for that, for definitely. We're going to definitely do that. Thank you very much, Andrew. That's Andrew Rosario, sports editor for the New York Beacon. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time here. We are done for this week. I'd like to thank all my guests today. Daryl Bell. I'd like to thank Andrew Rosario. I'd like to thank Dr. Drew Brown from University of Delaware. All the people who called in today. Thank you very much for being with us. Today was a great show. And so we'll see you next week on the Chris Murray Report on WURD. You're listening to 96.1 FM WURD, 900 AM WURD, Black Talk Media, and the Chris Murray Report will be back next week. Take care, y'all. Have a good weekend.
The Gleck Center is sponsoring a fundraiser crab festival, September 15th from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Germantown Life Enrichment Center, located in the YMCA building at 5722 Green Street. Enjoy live music by Firestorm, all-you-can-eat buffet dinner, dancing, and more. Proceeds benefit Gleck's Kids Scholarships. Tickets are $35. Beer and wine sold separately. For reservations and tickets, visit glifecenter.org or call 215-844-3281.
Wake up with Word on Word Radio.
It's the rapping professor Aaron Smith. Make sure y'all tune in for Waking Up with Word, because we will recap the whole weekend's events, politics, sports, music, the environment, the economy. You do not want to miss it. You're waking up with Word, y'all.
Don't miss Wake Up with Word, weekdays 7 a.m. till 10 a.m. right here on Word Radio, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD.
It's September, and once again, it's time for Strawberry Mansion Day, Saturday, September 8th, rain date Sunday, September 9th, located at Mander Recreation Center, 33rd and Diamond Street from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. In its 12th year, the Strawberry Mansion NEC and Council President Daryl L. Clark welcomes you for free resources and information, food, children's activities, and live music from Philly's own Down to Earth, Coast to Coast, and Russell Tompkins and the New Stylistics. Main stage entertainment begins at 1 p.m. Be there!
Celebrating 15 years as the voice of the community. This is Word Radio, 96.1 FM WURD and 900 AM WURD, Philadelphia. Black Talk Media.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests, listeners, and hosts of any program on Word Radio do not necessarily reflect those of ownership, management, or advertisers of this station.
You're listening to the best of Word Radio on 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD.
And we are back here at 96.1 FM, 900 AM WURD. You know, I was going to do this long, drawn-out introduction of Carlos Martinez, but he's done this thing before. He knows what this is about. So without further ado, young brother Carlos.
Is having an amazing day, an amazing Sunday, because you know the sun is out. You know it's gonna be a good day because I'm smiling. It should always be a good day no matter what's going on.
Oh,
but you know, I have a special guest here on the getting this morning started on a good note,
Good
right foot, you feel me? And I'm just ready for this Sunday to be going on. I hope everybody that's listening has a great week for this next week, because you know, just always keep pushing. That's all, you know me. Anybody that listen know me already, I'm always motivating people. But you know, it's Carlos Martinez, host of the Changing the Conversation radio show on 96.1 FM, 900 AM. And you know, I got a special guest. I don't know if y'all ready for him though.
Okay.
So he already said okay, so he's ready.
Okay, I'm ready for you, Philadelphia. How y'all doing today? Yeah. Listen, I'm ready to speak my piece. My name is Jonathan Burgos.
I am a native to Philadelphia, but I live in New Jersey at the moment. I'm 22 years old. I'm pursuing a degree in law. And listen, I'm just ready to go. Thank you to Carlos for having me. And I'm ready to speak my piece. I'm hoping y'all ready for that. And I'm just ready to go.
You're just ready to go. That's, that's what I like. See, this is why I brought him on the show.
Oh, yeah. Keep that energy.
I brought him on the show because, you know, he's a part of the Latino culture. He's a part of that black and brown culture that we all love. This is why you're listening to it. You're listening to it because just like Michael Kord is, he's a brother from North Philadelphia.
Oh,
he grew up in the streets. He know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm right there with him. And my brother